October 7th was inevitable, and for Noam Chomsky's classic book on the Middle East, Pirates and Emperors. Call us at 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or you can go online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in every weekday morning from 5:30 to 7 a.m. for variations on the theme of folk music during KBOO's Folk Strip. Each morning brings you a different DJ and a wonderful variety of acoustic and roots music, both traditional and contemporary. You'll hear the latest from singer-songwriters, happy jigs and reels, bluesy folk, a sea shanty or two, some old favorites, local artists and artists from around the world, a touch of Cajun, a dose of indie, and a smidge of jug band. It's probably the best way on earth to wake up. So let us start your day with a smile. Again, that's every weekday morning from 5:30 to 7 a.m. for KBOO's folk music programs.
Hey KBOO listeners, KBOO cut through the clouds during our end-of-year campaign thanks to support from listeners like you. When we meet our campaign goals, we can continue to bring you colorful, radiant rays of radio. Thank you, and keep tuning in for unique music, cutting-edge news, and transformative public affairs on the airwaves.
San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, an update on the Gaza genocide with the Middle East Children's Alliance, Ziad Abbas. Also, COPIC founder, author Medea Benjamin joins us to talk about a new coalition of peace organizations spearheaded by Code Pink and World Beyond War that have presented a petition and letter to UN representatives, embassies, and consulates across the United States, calling on nation states to unite with South Africa in charging Israel with genocide. Also, Deconstructing Warlandia, our weekly media column on the various U.S. wars. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We're coming to you every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. We're originating today here in the Bay Area over KPFA, and we are happy to have you along. We're also happy that there's a group called Code Pink, and they've been doing extraordinary things for some years now. Right now, they're part of a coalition of organizations. They're spearheading, along with World Beyond War Roots Action, the People's Forum, and they have presented a petition and letter to UN representatives, embassies, and consulates across the United States, and they're calling on nation states to unite with South Africa in charging Israel with genocide. The urgent plea implores members of the United Nations to join South Africa's filing to invoke the Genocide Convention at the International Court of Justice. Medea Benjamin, welcome back to Flashpoints, and we're also joined by San Francisco's Code Pink activist, Cynthia Papermaster. Medea, talk about this coalition and why you think it's crucial for nation states to join on around the world. It was an amazing action, a courageous action that South Africa took in support of implying and really exploring the possibilities of the genocide protocols. It's now actually in process.
Well, yes, thanks for having me on, Dennis. It's nice to be on with you. We were very excited to hear that South Africa is using this great vehicle, which is the International Court of Justice, to invoke the Genocide Convention. They filed their case on December 29th, and we thought that this was a good opportunity to go to the missions and embassies and consulates of countries that had leaders who had made statements calling out the Israeli government for genocide and making sure that they were aware that there is now the opportunity for them to join on to the South African lawsuit. And that was the purpose of the visits that we did on Thursday.
Now, it looks like the current president of the United States is a knowing active player in this genocide. He has now twice rushed more weapons, including some 5,800 of those 2,000-pound bunker busters, around congressional decisions right to the genocide, the scene of the genocide. Where are you in terms of Biden? He's the Democrat here, and he's the one who seems to be, in concert, a willing partner to genocide.
Well, yes, Dennis. In fact, today there was a press conference that the members of the Democratic Congress held in front of the Congress, calling out the January 6th insurrectionists and Trump, and saying that they had to abide by the rule of law and they were not above the law. And we were there calling them out and saying, well, what about Israel? Israel should not be above the law and should be held accountable. And these were Democrats. And our message was to say, we're not supporting the Republicans. They are equally as in favor of supporting Israel. But the Democrats are as well, and we also have been calling out the White House and Congress for taking all of this money from AIPAC, which then turns them into politicians who are bought and sold and will do the bidding of AIPAC, which right now is to support a genocidal regime. So the president, who used to be known as a very nice guy. Remember, Dennis, they used to call him Uncle Joe.
Now, and the consoler-in-chief. The consoler-in-chief.
Right.
He's there.
Consoler-in-chief.
Yeah.
And now he's known as Genocide Joe. And I think we have to make that name stick to him until he does something that shows that he's not going to keep supporting Israel's crime.
You know, there's been many echoes in the air. I hear this all the time, even from our Pacifica listeners. Yeah, well, we can't stand Biden, but look what's if we start acting up against no pun intended, against Biden, we're going to be stuck with Trump. Now, what's your response?
Well, that's the problem of the system, and I think we have to recognize that the entire system is broken, that whether we have Biden or Trump, we're still going to have a criminal enterprise that's running this country in both the White House and in the Congress. And we have to recognize that a lot of people in this country, and especially young people, are so disenfranchised that they are not going to vote. And there was a good poll and an article in the New York Times today that said that 3/4 of young people oppose Biden's policies when it comes to Israel. So you would think this would be a wake-up call for them, but we don't know, because, you know, there is more time before the election, but I don't know if people will forgive Biden. I couldn't vote for him, given what he's done in the last 3 months. So do I want to be stuck with Trump? No. Will I vote for Biden? No.
there are some powerful reverberations given the fact that it was South Africa that took on apartheid at home. And Nelson Mandela and Bishop Desmond Tutu have been quoted and have put forth the fact that they believe that the apartheid faced by Palestinians in Israel was worse than what they took on. Are you heartened that, South Africa has taken up the mantle towards genocide?
I think it's the best country that could possibly have done this because they have so much legitimacy from what they have gone through. And it is great. We went to the South African Embassy in Washington, D.C., and had a wonderful meeting with one of the representatives who said to us, we will not stop fighting until there is an end to this war, until there is justice for Palestinians. They have been committed to this struggle for decades. And so they give tremendous legitimacy. We want other countries to sign on because we want to show that there are countries, for example, in the Global South. We visited the embassies of countries in Latin America like Chile, Colombia, Honduras, Cuba, and we want countries from Asia. I must say, I think it is extremely disheartening for people in the Arab world to see how their governments have been only sympathetic in words but refused to do anything to actually hold Israel accountable. And this is one vehicle where the people of those countries can say to their own governments, get on board, support South Africa. So it's a good vehicle for us to use to try to show global condemnation. And of course, we've seen that at the UN, both in the various votes of the General Assembly, in the votes of the UN Security Council that's vetoed by the United States. We see where the global community stands on this, but this International Court of Justice is another opportunity to make that condemnation very clear.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Medea Benjamin. She's the founder of Code Pink. Code Pink has joined with a number of other organizations, including World Beyond War Roots Action, the People's Forum, and they are supporting the actions of South Africa in charging Israel with genocide. Also joining us is Cynthia Papermaster. She's with Code Pink in the Bay Area. And Cynthia, I understand you and other members of Code Pink and other folks were going around to embassies here in the Bay Area. What? Tell us a little bit about what you were up to and the kinds of responses that you were getting.
Thank you, Dennis. We went to consulates. They don't have embassies here, but we went to Chile.
Thank you.
Colombia, Belize, Brazil, and we were thinking of going to Honduras, but we didn't make it out there. And it was wonderful to be welcomed in by the consulates at Chile and Brazil. Unfortunately, Colombia's consulate is in the same building with the Israeli consulate. So they ushered us out, said, wait outside, someone will come out and talk to you. And then they locked the door so no one could get in the building. So we taped our petition. And by the way, our petition has close to 30,000 signatures on it, of people from all over. This is a Code Pink petition, and it's just encouraging these other countries, UN members, to file what are called Declaration of Intervention. It's a very simple process. They can help support South Africa in the International Court of Justice by doing this simple act, and that's one of the asks that we had yesterday. Belize was interesting. It's in the Zoetrope building in San Francisco, which is on Columbus and Kearney. And the honorary consul there is Francis Ford Coppola, the film director. He wasn't there, and neither was the consul. I mean, the consulate. Sorry. Anyway, we had a very interesting day. It was a wonderful group of people. We had beautiful posters that Code Pink furnished. We had flowers to give to each consulate. And we're going to send a thank you note to each of them and ask them to, again, ask them to file these declaration of intervention in support of South Africa.
Now, I understand in a related event, you've also been protesting in the context of the use of drones. I guess there were some arrests in the last couple of days.
Oh, we went to Travis Air Force Base. Is that what you...
Yes.
The Travis action? Oh, okay. We were out there telling Travis to not ship arms shipments to Israel. They're shipping arms, and we don't know what else from Travis, which is up near Vallejo, to Israel. And there were over 150 of us out there. 15 people got arrested in a nonviolent attempt to block the base, and we were able to close the base for up to 4 hours. We closed all the gates of the base. So we were joined by Palestinian groups and Veterans for Peace, Code Pink. Folks came from Grass Valley, Sacramento. It was a wonderful, wonderful, beautiful action.
Congratulations. All right, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Also with us still is Medea Benjamin. Before we let you go, Medea, I really, it's extraordinary to see the politics of this, to see, for instance, we have an African-American ambassador to the United States. I'm talking about the United States has an African-American ambassador to the UN. We've got the defense secretary is an African-American, and they are hardline participants in this ongoing, what many feel and what South Africa feels, is a genocide already happening. Has this confound you that I'm wondering where these folks were. Did they oppose Nelson Mandela in South Africa? How does this work?
Well, the black community in general is very sympathetic towards Palestine, but there are certain leaders that have been co-opted, and much of it with money. You look in the Congress, you see people like Hakeem Jeffries, or Congressman Meeks. They're both in very high positions. They take tremendous amounts of money from AIPAC, and they are members of the Black Caucus. On the other hand, you will see people like Barbara Lee and certainly the black members of the squad like Ayanna Pressley and Cori Bush, who are fantastic. So I think AIPAC has very has looked very carefully at how it can divide different communities, and it certainly has done that in the Black Caucus. On the positive side, we've seen that hundreds of members of leaders of Black clergy have come out to condemn the genocide. We see that icons in the Black community like Jesse Jackson have been very vocal and very clear. So there's division, but I think it's important to recognize that majority of people in the black community that we have seen from opinion polls are in favor of a ceasefire.
All right, Medea, what would you like to see people do in terms of this action in support of South Africa? What are you hoping that many people will do?
Well, as Cynthia said, we have over 30,000 people have signed the petition, but we'd love to get 50,000, so they can go on the codepink.org website, sign that, and pass it around. They can also make calls to the embassies as well. But it is important to start refocusing on Congress, because they're coming back to Washington, D.C.
Right.
Next week, and they're going to be voting on money to Israel. They're going to start out in the Senate by voting on a resolution introduced by Bernie Sanders to place conditions on that aid that would eliminate about $10 billion of it. And so that's a very important one to get people to support. Of course, we'd like zero aid, but that's not on the books right now. So I would say contact your members of Congress. And we've recently seen terrible statements by Nancy Pelosi. And it's so important to be doing what the Code Pink community in the Bay Area has been doing constantly. And Cynthia, you have a protest coming up, right?
Yes, we have an advocacy coming up. I like to say advocacy instead of protest. We're going to be going to Nancy Pelosi's house again. And she's getting visits quite often these days, not just from Code Pink. But we're going to have a lot of people going up to her house on the 13th, which is a Saturday that she might be home. This is always nonviolent. It's always family friendly. We invite people to bring their kids, their dogs, everything. But we are going to say loud and clear that Pelosi is not doing a good job of representing San Francisco in Congress because she continues to fund the genocide. She doesn't speak out against it. She doesn't call for a ceasefire. She's really not doing a good job at all.
Well,
and lastly, Dennis,
I
just wanted to say that while we feel disenfranchised by our own representatives and by the president in the White House, going around to these embassies was really uplifting to recognize that there are people representing governments in other countries who really care about the Palestinian cause, and that we can feel heartened that we're part of that global majority.
And I believe it came out today, there was something like 15 anonymous members, we'll see if they come out, working within, I guess, the Biden re-election campaign that have come out against his support of this genocidal policy. So it's interesting to see how things are building up from the bottom, things are bubbling up. I always love to thank Code Pink, Medea and Cynthia, for the extraordinary work you do. So appreciate you joining us, and come back and keep us posted, okay?
Thank you, Dennis.
Bye-bye.
You're absolutely welcome. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, a short break. And we're going to be joined by Ziad Abbas of the Middle East Children's Alliance. And we're going to talk about what's happening on the ground in Gaza, West Bank. Stay with us. Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is Flashpoints, your daily investigative news magazine, coming to you over the Pacifica Radio Network. No holds barred, free speech, non-corporate media, and we're proud of it. We're also proud to be working with the Middle East Children's Alliance, getting information and all kinds of deep knowledge about what happens in occupied Palestine, in Gaza, and the West Bank. And in times like these, we're always happy to have with us Ziad Abbas. He's executive director of the Middle East Children's Alliance. They have projects, or I should say, Ziad, that you all had projects in the Gaza Strip, but I understand they've had some problems. Why don't we start there? Are you still able to communicate with your brothers and sisters, with folks who work with MECCA on the ground in Gaza?
Thank you, Dennis, for having me. Yes, actually, yes, we are able to communicate with our colleagues in the ground. And yes, actually, we had many projects in Gaza Strip, but right now our focus is one, helping the community, whatever it's possible to help them to live in dignity and to get what they need, which what we do is not that's something huge, because it's huge need there. in Gaza Strip. I am in touch with some people. It depends on the internet. My colleagues too in Palestine and West Bank, they are able to communicate with our colleagues in Gaza Strip because the frequency and they are using the same. And sometimes the same time zone, they can communicate better than we communicate here with the United States. Yeah, the people there, it's still a difficult situation, especially right now, I can say. You remember we were speaking and focusing in north of Gaza. You remember these days?
Yes.
Of course, we are speaking right now, Dennis, after 3 months, over 3 months right now. In Gaza Strip. Right now, the focus is in the middle area. And when I say middle area, we speak about Nusayrat, Lebrage, Deir al-Balah, al-Maghazi, all these areas, they are the middle area, which many, many people are still living there, and they are bombing and killing there. And of course, Khan Yunis too. Khan Yunis is taking all these units that they withdraw from north of Gaza, and they moved them to toward the middle and south of Gaza, where they are huge. Last night, it was a huge escalation. This is what we got from our police on the ground, a huge escalation, like bombing everywhere in the middle area and in Khan Yunis. And according to the people there, it was one of the toughest nights, the way how they are bombing, targeting families, targeting houses, targeting shelters, mosques, everything in this area. And the sad part, actually, where all the time I love to bring my colleague voices, one of our colleagues here, name is Wafa. She is one of the people leading our work in Gaza Strip in general. She's from Nusayrat refugee camp. And she wrote a lot, and I wrote about her a lot, actually, in Mecca and what we publish outside, that she refused, and her family, they refused to evacuate. And they are coming now where they are preparing their bags. They are still in Nusayrat. But many people, their neighbors, they were bombed, and because the idea for them, this is easier leaving the house, leaving to start anew. It doesn't mean they are blaming the people they are leaving, but they saw what happened to the people. They are already evacuated from the north of Gaza, from Beit Lahia, Beit Hanun, Shaja'iyah, what happened to them. And many of them, they were killed in the road while they are evacuating. And this has happened 2 days ago, actually, when some people actually, they evacuated from Bridge refugee camp. They were bombed in the way, and some of the people, they were killed, including children and women. And this is the difficult part, like when our colleague Wafa, all the time she said, if this happened, she accepted, but leaving, evacuating and leaving, going to unknown, this is the double death, according to her description. The situation in Gaza is still very bad. We still do our work. We are working in the middle area. We still do some work there with our colleagues, partners on the ground. We are working in Khan Yunis a little bit because it's heavy bombing. It's a little bit difficult. But in Rafah city, where you have over 1 million Palestinians, they are already evacuated from different parts of Gaza. Right now, they are in Rafah city. And when I say Rafah city, this is the city that was divided during Camp David, when they put the fence between Egypt, Sinai, and Egypt, Arish area, and actually divided Rafah city. Even some of the people they used to live in Rafah, actually, some of them become in the Egyptian side. But you have over 1 million. We are working there. We have actually two major kitchens there where we try to offer hot meals to the people living in shelters. We to distribute whatever is possible to collect there. We have some stuff succeed with other partners to come through the Rafah borders and get in, like food kits, hygiene kits, including water, whatever is possible, we try to distribute in Rafah and sometimes move some stuff to the middle area, to Khan Yunis, when it's possible. But the people, I give a credit to the people in the ground. I don't mean Mecca here. I mean, the people, they are working in Gaza. The people, they are taking the risk. And the people, they are already taking care, try to support each other and to take care of each other. Gaza right now, you speak about almost between 85 to 90 percent, they are not living in their homes anymore. Over 70 percent, wow. Gaza is destroyed already. Actually, It's much more than 70, minimum 70% of Gaza. 2 weeks ago, we were speaking about 60, 65%. Now we speak over 70% of Gaza already destroyed. And the people, they are moving. I tell you, for example, other friend in the north of Gaza, he's still, you remember that lady, we had that long interview live while they are in 21?
When they were bombing and she was worried that her kids were so scared, yes, they would break their teeth.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember,
yes,
that.
Umlana, we call her Umlana. Her husband, his name, first name, Iyad. We go with the first name. And she is still refused, and her family, and I speak about the big family. It's not just her husband, her three daughters, and herself, but her family, part of her parents and her brothers, and his family too. They are living in 3 square miles, but they are moving in north of Gaza. They move every few days from place. They are following their luck. You remember when we talk about people in Gaza, they survive on their luck and collective spirit. Yes. Now Iyad and his family, his children, they are moving from house to area where the bombing, they try to go to the other side. And for 3 months, I don't believe that, Jan. For 3 months right now, they are surviving in 3 to maximum 4 square miles where they can move from area to other area to live there. And you speak about very bad health situation. Over 400,000 people in Gaza right now suffering from different kind of disease. Disease spread everywhere. And you have from severe diarrhea to other kind of lung disease and skin disease, and I'm not speaking about the mental impact in everyone living in Gaza Strip. I'm speaking about the physical and related to sanitation, where the people, they don't have enough water or clean water. The people, they are not able to shower. The children, they are not able to shower. And people, they are living in shelters, and they are stuck in shelters. They are surrounded by tanks. They can't leave. People sometimes, like what happened in Brescia yesterday, where shot people, they were injured and dead while they are in the street. No one can reach them, and they don't allow the ambulances to reach them. They are targeting everything. The same in Khan Yunis, where many neighborhoods. Yesterday they were focusing in Al Amal, which is the heart of Khan Yunis city, Al Amal neighborhood. And Amal means the hope. The hope neighborhood in Khan Yunis were bombing, and while the people in their houses, where you have in some families 35 people, they were killed. And the people in Gaza, they call it right now, it's massacres. Every family has a massacre. And this is still spread everywhere, where it's become harder and harder. And even they order the people to evacuate from area to other area. But even the area where they tell them it's secure, they bomb them there. And the people, they don't know how to deal with it. So some people, they decided, we are not leaving. We can move around our house, go there a few hundred meters, come back, move around. And already you have 1 million people. Gaza and Rafah city, no space. The whole city now, it's full of people evacuated everywhere, every square, every street. There are people taking, and there are tents and people living with other houses with the minimum, try to survive there. It's a chaos. The same, it's like when you talk with the people there, is they don't believe it's 3 months. And recently they start, we don't count the days. Sometimes we don't know what is the day. They say like this, because you try just to survive that day. This is what you hear from them.
Yeah.
Yes, Dennis.
We're speaking with Ziad Abbas of the Middle East Children's Alliance. Obviously, we're talking about what's been going on in Gaza. My understanding is there were over 175 Palestinians murdered in the last 24 hours, and the U.S. is still shipping over those bombs. You know, Ziad, there's also a lot of loose talk. We're hearing a lot of loose talk about... now the Israelis are going to get humanitarian, and they're suggesting maybe it's the safest thing for the Palestinians to get the hell out of Gaza and go into the Sinai. I don't think that's playing well on the Palestinian street, but it's terrifying talk in the single end, and it's going to be Hezbollah next. They gave Hezbollah a warning, but I'm wondering but there's also some hope in terms of the resistance. I'm wondering how you're thinking about this and what this dialogue looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm thinking it's not that important as much what I hear from people there, what they think about this. And I say that all the time. And, you know, after 90 days, what the people they feel there, what they are going through, the hard time. And they say in simple way, they say that if we die, it's okay, but we don't want to die for nothing. All what's going on in Gaza, this is the right direction for our political rights as Palestinians to access our rights. We fed up with this occupation. We fed up with this colonial system. We fed up with the world, how they are treating Palestinian and dehumanized Palestinian, and all the support coming to Israel from United States or from other country Europe or from other countries. They are silent, by the way, because there are some countries, including Arab countries, they are silent. They are not doing that much, which they are, they consider them. They say the sacrifice is huge. Right now we are passing 22,600 people they are killed, 10,000 children, over 10,000. 7,000 to 8,000 people, they are still under the rubble. Most of them, they are children and women, and they are members of families. They are over 1,500 families erased, completely or partially, I can say, killed, and many members from the same family. And yesterday I was talking with a friend, old friend from Gaza, 32. He's living in Utah here in the United States. 32 from his family already done, gone, cousins, in-laws, etc. He tells me, I don't know if someday I will go to Gaza, I will not find family there anymore. And the people, they say in simply there, we don't want all our sacrifice to go for nothing. Palestinians, they are sacrificing, not just since the Nakba, before long time, during the British mandate, even during the Ottoman. We never have our own independence as Palestinian, and they don't want. And they think what happened since recently and all this genocide happening, ongoing genocide in Palestine, they want to see there is the achievement is in short term should be something worth it. And for long term, of course, they want to have their own rights. They want to access their rights. They want to be able to live in dignity and get political rights. People there, you know, the majority of people living in Gaza, they are refugees. They never, yes. My friends, most of them, they are refugees from refugee camps in Gaza. They think we are closer to our village than any time before, because all this sacrifice, all this blood, all what's going on, this is what they say. I totally, this is what I hear from them coming there. And they say, okay, if we will die, we'll die. Yeah. It's like after 22,600 people already die, okay, this is, if it happens, it happens. But we want our sacrifice to be in the right direction to achieve our political rights. Now, whatever coming politically, they speak about you make it easy, more aids coming to, come on, we are speaking about since the second week about aid to Gaza. And even really? Sometimes you hear from the White House, you hear the Secretary of the State, you hear from Europe, Macron, now we'll make it, we'll try help. We need to make it easy. And still, you know, my colleague, she is in West Bank, Jersey, and she, every day she spent time for like a truck to bus from area to area to help, to connect with our colleagues on the ground. One truck to get it from area to get to the people. These people just, it's a blah, blah. It's like they are sending like Advil, I call it. Advil just for the media, yeah. But on the ground, yes, it's nothing. Prince, yeah. Still, there are, everything is missing in Gaza. If they want to do something, already did it, to make it easy for the people to access the aid or access support or medical. Imagine, we have over 50,000 women they are pregnant in Gaza. Some of these women, they lost their children. Some of them, they lose their life. And because no hospitals in north of Gaza. There are only a few hospitals in the middle area and the south area, which they are working over their capacity. So I don't believe this is something only for the media. And the people, they are very hopeful. Honestly, I say, I know after 3 months. And they are still hopeful. And to be honest with you, Dennis, and we say it publicly right now, we Palestinians in general, yes, part of us destroyed. I don't know if we were really, ever really recovered from that. This is genocide happening to our people, to our community, to our families, to our land, to our history, to our identity, to our culture in every level. in every street in Gaza Strip. And don't forget West Bank. West Bank is every day, while I'm talking with you, they are invading right now, Qalqilia, part of Nablus, Yabat Jenin, in Hebron, in different parts, in Jerusalem. But we are, yeah, part of us, they succeed to destroy it. But look, 75 years, did they succeed to break the spirit of the Palestinians? Never. This is what we hear from people in Gaza, and people in West Bank, and people in USA, and people, Palestinian people in Lebanon or other refugee camps. This is something, it's related to a human need to live in dignity and respect yourself, that you can access, someday you can access your rights as a human being, or to access your land or your village or something like people they are dying for.
Listen, Ziad, I want you to just take a minute and let people know how to get in touch with the Middle East Children's Alliance. And I know there's AROC. There's a number of organizations that are doing actions all the time. What's the best way for people to tap into these actions?
Yeah, absolutely. There are many good organizations in the area. They are doing amazing work, from AROC, the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, the Palestinian Youth Movement, the Jewish Voice for Peace, and other groups, and many, many other groups, diverse groups from all over. They are in solidarity with Palestine. They are organizing. They can go to their website. And for the people to learn even about what's going on, just go sign up in Mecca, subscribe, receive our email. You receive all the time about the activities in the Bay Area. And for example, tomorrow, actually, our neighbors, you know, we are in Berkeley here. Our neighbors, actually, and so in Albany and El Cerrito, they are organizing, actually, Albany and El Cerrito demand immediate ceasefire tomorrow at 11 o'clock on Solano and Masonic at 11 a.m. Saturday, tomorrow. And they are calling for ceasefire, the people in these two areas here around us. And there are a lot of activities going on. People, they can go to our website, meccaforpeace.org, and of course they can reach out to AROC, UIM, and Jewish Voice for Peace, and they can learn more about any other activities.
All right, Ziad, thank you for taking the time out to let us, or let our audience know what's going on the ground and what it's like to be a Palestinian in 2024. And it's only the third or fifth or sixth day of this month, and the terror continues. Thank you, Ziad. Be safe. Come back soon, please.
Thank you, Nick.
You're so welcome, and you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to play this. We're running late, but we're going to play this this David Kovacs song again. David, did I say?
After so many decades of patronage with the world's greatest empire, after so many potential agreements were rejected by opening fire, after crushing so many uprisings, now they're making their ultimate bid, pursuing their final solution, just like the Nazis did. They forced refugees into ghettos, then set the ghettos aflame, murdering writers and poets, and so no one remembers their names. Killing their entire families, the grandparents, women, and kids, the uncles and cousins and babies, just like the Nazis did. They're bombing all means of sustaining human life at all. See the few shelters remaining, watch as the tower blocks fall. They're bombing museums and libraries in order to get rid of any memory of the people who lived here, just like the Nazis did. They're saying these people are animals, they should all end up dead. They're sending soldiers into schools and shooting children in the head. The rhetoric is identical, and with Gaza off the grid, they've already said what happens next, just like the Nazis did. words of war for domestic consumption and lies for all the rest.
David Rovics writing powerfully about the ongoing genocide. As always, we're running late. We are happy to welcome back Arun Gupta. He's been doing terrific work sort of deconstructing the mainstream reporting or lack thereof. Arun, I'm just going to turn it over to you. I know you've been looking at the press, what's been happening. Why don't you just take it from here, and what's troubling you most? Where are we going to start?
Let's quickly start with the Ukraine, because it's basically completely dropped out of the news, except in the last few days where there have been all these Russian missile strikes on cities in Ukraine. It's clear that they're trying to bring the civilian infrastructure to its knees, bomb the electricity, bomb services, to try and cause a collapse of the economy. And Ukraine has reacted by, you know, these are war crimes, and Russia killed dozens of civilians, and Ukraine has reacted with its own war crimes. But basically, what we're seeing is Ukraine is being abandoned by the West. It's being thrown on the bus for support for Israel. You know, Ukraine is hoping for all these munitions, all these artillery shells, all these missiles, bombs. They're instead going to Israel so they can kill more children, kill more women, massacre more families. Ukraine is running out of money. They're in a situation where they can't pay teachers, they can't pay government workers, they can't pay pensioners, and Russia is making military gains on the battlefield. So the thing is, it's not looking good for the Ukrainians, and this calls into question the whole U.S. strategy of the last 2 years. The U.S. and the West has pumped a staggering amount of money, a $250 billion and munitions, and you know, from the beginning, people, myself included, have been criticizing it, that the U.S. is willing to fight to the last Ukrainian, and instead of seeking some sort of ceasefire and peace deal, they've been encouraging Ukraine to fight, and it's starting to look more and more that Ukraine will have to accept an unjust peace. And so that is the question is, well, what was the 2 years of fighting all about? But I wanted, you know, the big news, of course, is what's going on in the Middle East. And we have to understand that this is already a regional war, that, you know, you see headlines every day about tensions increasing and fear of a wider war. And it's true, it hasn't exploded into a conflagration, but it is on the cusp of it. Right now, between U.S. and Israel, obviously Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. As we've talked about, there's been nothing like this in human history. Obviously, there's been numerous genocides in the going back hundreds of years, particularly in modern capitalism, last 150 or so years. But never has there been such a rapid and systematic murder of a society, just everything. You know, it's just like, so far Israel has killed or wounded nearly 4% of the population of Gaza, and that's in 3 months. So it's on a pace to basically turn 15 to 20% of the Gazan population into casualties in 1 year. This ranks with the scale of the Holocaust during World War II, but it's accompanied by this massive destruction of housing. You know, there's this new term being used, domicide, to recognize that Israel is completely destroying housing, 70%. It's wiping out the healthcare infrastructure, hundreds of doctors, nurses, and medical workers, universities, libraries, schools, roads, waterworks, internet, sewage. Over 100 archaeological sites have been destroyed, mosques, churches. It's just absolutely appalling. And the second thing that makes it different is we can watch this second by second. And that is what is so horrifying, because if this isn't stopped, this is, I think, really going to set the tone for this century, the normalizing of this type of genocide. And I think, you know, it's important that everyone really try and get out on the streets, especially January 13th. There's national protests in Washington, D.C. I'm sure there'll be a big protest on the West Coast as well, in San Francisco and Los Angeles. But it's just really important that people lend their voices and bodies to pushing for just a ceasefire and, of course, ultimately an end to the occupation. But some positive developments, I think, if it's going to be positive, is the South African filing the case against Israel in the International Court of Justice, charging them with genocide. And it's well worth taking a look at the report, especially starting on page 59, where they just list just the incitement to genocide by all these high-ranking Israeli officials. And, you know, scholars of the Holocaust and genocide have been expressing shock from the beginning how open these calls from genocide are, right? It starts with the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, saying we're going to put a complete siege. They're human animals, and we're going to treat them as such. We're going to cut off food, fuel, water, electricity, and that's exactly what Israel has done.
They did it.
You know, first we've seen this genocide of bombs, and now it's a genocide of bacteria. You know, all these different diseases are spreading rapidly. And in the last week, something like 21,000 children, 3,000 a day, have developed diarrhea. And for children, diarrhea is deadly because it dehydrates them and leads to organ failure. And so, you know, in response to that, South Africa has filed this lawsuit. And Israel, if you read the Israeli press, they are freaking out somewhat. And so they, you know, they're trying to quash the case. This is going to isolate them more. You know, Israel is not the most popular country in the world. It never has been, because it is carrying out this brutal occupation. And, you know, I think it's safe to say that Israel is just going to be the most hated country in the world, rightfully so, for decades to come, to be carrying out such a horrifying genocide. But, you know, what I'm saying is this has become a regional war, right? You know, that Israel is bombing Lebanon every day. They just assassinated a Hamas official who is directly involved in the hostage negotiations in Beirut. The U.S. is basically engaged in this naval war with Yemen. Israel is bombing, and the U.S. is bombing Syria. They're also bombing Iraq. The U.S. Actually carried out a bombing in Baghdad itself, which is just astonishing. You know, you can imagine if some group was bombing war criminals in D.C., how the U.S. would react. And the U.S. and Israel are also assassinating Iranian officials. So, you know, basically, you know, U.S. and Israel are really kind of one state. Israel is just a giant military base for U.S. Anglo-imperialism. And so they're engaged in a war against six countries. And they're sending out cables to their diplomatic missions in the world, calling on them to pressure government to reject the genocide charges as baseless. And, you know, like a puppet on a string, John Kirby gets before the cameras. You know, he decries what Russia's bombing on Ukraine and then turns around and says, you know, these charges of genocide are meritless and they're absurd and they're without any credence whatsoever.
But that, I think, is a sign of the pressure that Israel is under. And Axios got a hold of some cable where Israel is warning its government of the diplomatic, economic, and political damage that these genocide case could bring.
You know what's really on my mind, to just to interrupt here for a second, is you talk about it's very clear. Two things are clear. One, Biden is the number one recipient of money from the Israeli lobby. That's number one. Number two, Netanyahu, he knows his career is over as soon as this war ends. So he's saying it's going to go through next year because that's how he sustains himself. It seems both these politicians are playing this game about how can the war get me reelected or keep me in power. And that's disgusting as well.
Well, you know, I've spoken on recent weeks just about the fact that it's just like, look, you know, waiting in the wings, obviously, is Cheeto Hitler, Donald Trump. And at this point, I don't know what more to say. I can't tell people to vote for Genocide Joe. All I can do is warn them what happens if Trump gets into power. You know, as bad as things are, it will be significantly worse, right? We're at least able to protest today. We're going to find Palestinians and Muslims being rounded up and deported. We're going to find regular nonviolent protesters, peaceful protesters being hit with, charged with crimes by Trump's DOJ, thrown into jail. It's going to be really bad. But I feel like, you know, it's sitting in a hurricane, because we've seen these polls that have come out in the last week where Trump has a higher approval rating among Latinos and more support among Latinos, yes, than Biden. Biden's approval rating among African Americans support is down to 63%. That's astonishing. That is unheard of in the post-civil rights era, that a Democrat isn't polling 85-90% or more among African Americans. You know, young people have completely abandoned Joe Biden. And there are a number of reasons, but I think especially with young people in the African American community, it's clear. It's Gaza. You know, it's for a lot of African Americans, what's going on in Gaza resonates directly. The type of dehumanization, the racism, the massacres, you know, they get it. You know, whether it's in the U.S. or Africa, for hundreds of years, what Western colonialism has wrought. And so it's not hard to see, you know, to be sympathetic and to understand that this is the same vicious racist system. And so I just don't know what to say, because I think Biden may very well be toast, and we could be looking at fascism. So while for Netanyahu, he's looking to stay in power, Biden is burning American democracy to keep this genocide going. You know, but I think that is a very important point. There was a recent Washington Post article, you know, as Noam Chomsky says, it's all there in the official record, you know, said it's because of these billionaire donors. That's a big part of the reason that Biden is supporting and funding and arming and protecting this Israeli genocide against Gaza. And you know, we all remember how Ilhan Omar was censored by the House for saying it's all about the Benjamins in terms of the Israeli-U.S. relationship, you know, when all she was doing was speaking the exact truth. It's the money. And it has nothing to do with Jews or anti-Semitism. It's about power, wealth, imperial interests, and the fact that, as I said, Israel is just a military outpost. You know, and at this point, I think, you know, Israel is basically a death squad attached to a state. You know, it's little more than that.
You know, I was thinking, Arun, and we hear a lot about, you know, the nonpartisan U.S. Tony Blinken's in the region to talk about peace. What about, how about, like, they got the Iron Dome for the Israelis, they got the Iron Dome for the Ukrainians. How about the Iron Dome for the Palestinians? Right, fair is fair.
Well, you know, unfortunately, they don't have any oil. You know, actually, they do have gas, though, which Israel and the U.S. is stealing it all. I don't think that has anything to do with the war. In fact, you know, the fact is the war makes it harder to extract the gas. It forces the oil companies.
But if you genocide the entire Gaza Strip and you push everybody into the Sinai, free drilling. And then you could put the dome up.
You know, but the Sinai, there's a report in the Times of Israel that Israel is talking to Congo about forcing Palestinians there. I mean, it's just absolutely astonishing. It's just like, here, you know, we'll dump you in the middle of this brutal civil war. You know, it's just absolutely appalling what's going on. But we can do something about it, and that's to take to the streets. So next Saturday, January 13th, go be on the streets, look it up in your city, gather your friends and family, and get out there and protest for a ceasefire now.
That's the voice of Arun Gupta. He does our media column every Friday where we deconstruct media and we try and give you a view of...
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO. 2 hours of global bass with an emphasis on South Asia and the South Asian diaspora, and an even more special emphasis on the Punjabi diaspora. Hosted every Tuesday, 10 to midnight, by The Incredible Kid. This ain't world music, it's birth of a new world music.
Tune in to KBOO on Monday, January 15th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. for a special live